You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It's Tuesday, December 19th. We're talking Dodgers baseball as we bring in national reporter and columnist for MLB.com, Barry Bloom. Barry, thanks very much for taking the time here in studio today. And usually teams that come within one game of winning the World Series don't pull off blockbuster off-season trades. But that's kind of what went down as the Dodgers sent Adrian Gonzalez, Brandon McCarthy, Scott Kazmir, Charlie Culberson to the Braves for former Dodger Matt Kemp, obviously shedding salary there. What was the purpose of this move? What's your take on it?
I actually think it's amazing that they were able to get rid of all those contracts, because when I looked at it, you go, you know, Gonzalez missed most of the season with a back injury, and they really don't have any place for him anymore. Nobody knows how healthy he's going to be. And Kazmir didn't pitch the entire season, and McCarthy missed most of it. So, I mean, the fact that they would get the Braves to pick up a lot of that money in return for Matt Kemp's contract, which they're paying $4 million a year on anyway from the trade to San Diego, I think it was a masterful stroke, and it gave them some, you know, room on there on the salary threshold. It gave them some room on for growth in the future, and a lot of flexibility, particularly with guys that aren't really, contributors at this point.
And you mentioned the future. Is there something maybe down the line, people mention Bryce Harper, throw it out there, that could be something that is targeted based on shedding this salary now, or is that sort of reaching too far?
I don't think there's any question that, you know, teams are always looking. It's a you know, multi-tiered approach for any front office at this point, where, you know, you're always looking at the coming season and seasons ahead, you know, to what you can do. And you look at the market, and certainly a market next year where Harper and Machado are going to be out there. They have money to spend. Whether or not they're going to be able to coax either of those guys or any of the free agents out there into it, you know, is obviously unforeseen at this point.
The Dodgers, obviously, they have a lot of money to spend, and by shedding that salary, is it just about getting under that tax threshold? They don't have to pay as much? Is that what it's about, or is it the owners saying, okay, I just don't want to spend as much money? What is the real purpose of that? The fans say, oh, who cares? It's not my money. So what's the deal there?
Well, it's a little complicated on the tax threshold. It's $197 million. For every cent that you spend above $197 million, you have to pay a tax. The Dodgers were at $250 million last year, so they had to pay a tax. I'm not sure how many repeater years they had, but in the repeater years, the higher you go, the more years you have, the higher the tax is.
Sounds like my credit card problem.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So essentially, you know, when you're saying that you know, if you have, like the Yankees have been paying at a 35% tax for years because they've just repeated for 10 years.
Right.
Now, if you say we duck under 1 year, and if we go back over again, we're at like 7.5%, that's a huge difference, because you're adding $7 million, $6 million onto your payroll just in taxes as part of the deals that you're making is for free agents.
Right.
So I think that's the reason why a team like the Dodgers and a team like the Yankees want to at least duck down 1 year, so that if they go back above, they're just paying the lower tax.
That makes sense. Totally. It's the cumulative effect, right, year after year, for sure. So play professor right now. It's midterm finals for a lot of students around, but midterm of the offseason, you're Professor Barry Bloom here talking Dodgers. And what would you give them as an offseason grade so far? I'll quickly, but they also added Tom Kohler to the mix there. What would you give them?
Well, right now I'd give them a C, but it's an ascending. It's kind of a first semester grade.
Right. There's time.
There's time. And the fact is, I think that the way the free agent market is going now, there's still a lot of big names out there. And as you get closer to spring training, there are going to be good bargains on good players. Now, whether they're going to try and flip Kemp and eat some more of that salary and do something else, I think that's a question. I'm happy for Culberson, actually, because his family is from Georgia. So,
oh, okay.
You know, it gives him kind of like a return home. I met them during the World Series. I ran into him in a restaurant. They were sweet people. You know, so I think that that's good. And he was a great ad for them. He really helped them in the NLCS. But I think, you know, with the guys that they have, they've got a strong minor league system. You know, they've got people coming. And I'm not even sure, you know, if there was an American League, a DH league, you know, Kemp would be great as the DH.
Right.
I'm not sure you want him out in left field on a regular basis anymore. So I look for them to do something. And I think there's a lot that they're going to do in January and early February before you go to spring training.
They have so many assets that they have the potential to do a lot of different things for sure. One guy that won't be coming, though, and will be joining a team right next door, the Angels, is Shohei Ohtani. Obviously, two-way prodigy, tremendous young player from all indications. How disappointed were the Dodgers, or were they prepared for that to happen where they weren't going to be able to maybe reel him in?
I think that the Dodgers probably felt that they weren't the greatest team in the mix for that. You know, Ohtani was looking for, and well stated, an organization with not a great history of Japanese involvement, you know, with players coming over from that country. And he got one in the Angels. I mean, they're the highest I mean, I think he's the highest profile Japanese player ever to play for the Angels. And he comes in where, on a pitching staff that they have, which is in total flux, he's now questionably the number one pitcher. You go to the Dodgers or the Giants, he's at best number two behind Kershaw or Bumgarner, and maybe even a few rungs below that. So, I mean, I think it was a perfect spot for Ohtani. And I think the Dodgers probably figured they weren't high on the list.
Barry Bloom, national reporter and columnist from MLB.com, joining us here. And I just wanted to follow up real quick, just your overall thoughts with Ohtani. How skeptical are you about his ability to, because there's a lot that goes on in off days with pitchers in terms of preparing for the next start. How skeptical are you about his ability to pitch well, then go and DH and contribute as a hitter while also then preparing for his next start? Or do you see them being able to do that?
Well, I'm not skeptical about it. All I'm looking at is that, you know, I'm probably one of the only national reporters in this country who's actually seen him hit and pitch.
Okay.
And interviewed him a couple of times.
Okay.
So, and I think he's an unassuming, very nice young man. Mm-hmm. But my gauge of it, having been over to Japan a number of times, is that, you know, it's pretty much double-A, triple-A hitting and double-A, triple-A pitching over there. So Ohtani comes to the major leagues, and the question is going to be, how is that going to translate on not only if he'd be enough as a pitcher, which he really didn't pitch much last year because of injuries. He only made five starts. It'd be enough coming in just as a pitcher to establish himself against major league hitters. But on the other days, he's trying to establish himself as a major league hitter against major league pitchers. So I think there's a lot out there and a lot of time to develop this. You know, I wouldn't look at it as being something that he's going to really explode on the scene. He might be disappointing in the early going as he develops and goes around the league. And I think this is part of the way he looked at it. He could take 2 years at 23, 24 at a low salary, come over here, gauge his ability to play in the league, let everybody gauge him, and then when he goes to free agency at 25, then you know, if everybody knows what he can do and it translates over here, then he really goes for the big bucks.
Absolutely.
So I think it'll be a huge story, and I think interesting either way. If he plays half of what I think he's going to play, he's going to be a tremendous marketing asset for the league.
Oh, yeah, no question. I mean, and the league can certainly use even more star power and just excitement, individual stories like that. So that'll be fun, certainly, to watch. Of course, it is gift-giving season, holiday season here. And if you mentioned the Dodgers are not done making moves, so if the fans were to receive a gift from their front office, maybe, you know, not like tube socks, but like a nice gift from their front office, what player, what free agent, what's still out there that maybe the Dodgers could do here that the fans would say, wow, okay, I'll take that gift?
You know what? I may be in a minority on this, but I don't think it would be a bad idea to bring back Yu Darvish. They only had him for a couple of months after free agency. They spent a lot of time trying to retool his mechanics during those months. It was a difficult couple of months. It really showed in the World Series, whether it was tipping his pitches or whatever he was doing, you know, but he's a huge talent. And I think he would be a great complementary part to that pitching staff.
Definitely. I think he would certainly add. And just to close out here, Barry, I saw Kobe Bryant's numbers, plural, went up the Staples Center rafters last night in L.A. Dave Roberts, manager Dave Roberts, Kenley Jansen in attendance. We've also seen Yasiel Puig has a bit of a friendship with Kobe as well. Just your thoughts on the sort of the molding of the teams out there and the support of Kobe. And also if Bryant came into the league at 18 years old, Puig came in a tough situation. Is there any sort of mentor protege, or would you say maybe that's not a good thing?
Well, I mean, obviously it's a completely different situation. Yeah. I mean, Kobe came in as a top-ranked high school player whose father played in the NBA. He'd been around the NBA for many years, and I think he was pretty well touted. In fact, I think the Lakers traded up to get the pick so they could draft Kobe.
Yes,
so
the Hornets, yeah.
The situation with Puig was, you know, he wasn't a really – he was a great raw talent, but not even a real high-packed high school player on the island. He'd never played with the national team. So when the Dodgers signed him, they signed him off a batting practice in Mexico City after he was spirited out of the island by, you know, like nefarious forces who chased him for years for the money.
Right.
So, I mean, he came over here in the worst kind of circumstances. And anybody who – you know, really has gone through it, and at the end of your career, you know, has your number retired. They all become, whether it's Gretzky over there, whether it's all, the Dodgers only retire the numbers of their Hall of Famers. There's only one non-Hall of Famer who was retired, that's Gilliam, and that was under severe pressure from the team at the time, a player, Reggie Smith, Dusty Baker. They essentially almost threatened not to play the World Series that year if they didn't retire his number.
When was
this was like 1978.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So
okay.
It's like they did, but generally they don't retire any numbers.
Right.
So it's even Jackie Robinson's number, because of his relationship with O'Malley, which had deteriorated to such a degree, even his number was like retired 10 years after he was in the Hall of Fame, and it was retired right before he died.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's a big thing to retire a number in Dodger history. And I think if you look around the community in any of the other sports, having a Brian or a Magic obviously is still part of the ownership of that team. So there are great links between the Lakers and the Dodgers. And I don't think there's any, you know, non-benefit in right. not using them.
Yeah, certainly no drawback there. Barry, great stuff. Great having you in here. National reporter and columnist for MLB.com, Barry Bloom, joining us here in studio. Barry, pleasure. Thanks for joining us here on
MLB.com.
Same to you, my friend.
Great to be here.